right now in with appetite and love in our hearts and great curiosity, work with each other in treasuring what we have right now.
Yeah. Final words, Joanna. I'm wondering, what would you most like to see change in your lifetime, given your longtime advocacy for ecological and social justice?
Oh.
Is it too big of a question? Too big of a wish list?
Oh, yeah. Well, I would like to see the United States break up into a smaller countries.
Mm.
I bet you I never expected to say that.
Yeah, well.
And I would like to see people coming together in the streets and not be so acquiescent to the tyranny and folly of those who are temporarily in power. I want to see people taking each other's hands and walking out to demand that the obvious, mm-hmm. that the life go on, and the insane policies of the present
that life go on. I like that. Joanna, could you share with us your website and ways that the listeners can stay in contact with you?
Well, they can write me care of the website for the work that reconnects.
The work that reconnects.
It's called, and it's
you are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomas on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
The following program is a rebroadcast. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. But not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel. Welcome to Life Stamps, stories from here and there. This is your host, Joseph, with my co-host.
I am Tyson again.
Hey, Tyson. So today we are going to be going to the country of Zambia. I'm interviewing my brother, Jimmy, actually, and he was in Zambia. When were you there?
2018.
So, yeah, back in 2018, you were there for 6 months, right?
Yes.
So,
First I must say, welcome to the studio, Jimmy. I mean, I guess it's the brother in him. That's not going to give you a proper welcome into our studios. So, welcome, and thanks for coming in to do an interview today.
Thanks, yes. Tyson.
Well, welcome. Yeah. Welcome, bro.
Thanks. Yeah, I feel thoroughly welcomed.
That's great. Yeah. It's
good to feel welcomed.
What's it like to be Joseph's brother?
I'd say that I feel... Oh... we should just talk about that for an hour.
Well, we can, actually, because this is a travel show. As much as we'd like to
we would be traveling through our relationship.
Yeah.
Our life relationship. Well,
Been fun, you know, because he's older than me, so I get to see everything that he does.
Did he inspire you to travel?
My whole family did, because because everyone in my family has traveled quite a bit.
Okay. Well, so and was
myself. Was, I inspired myself.
Was Zambia your first time leaving the country?
No. Well, because I mean, I don't know. I have to think back. It was quite a few. The first time that I'd ever done something on my own for like a long time. Yeah, because I just graduated from college, so it was like my first big thing that I did.
Right, right. And you have a lot of explorers that have influenced you and your family and stuff, you know.
Yeah, even way back, you know, Ferdinand Magellan, Marco Polo.
Okay.
Famous explorers.
Yeah.
So that was back in 2018. So tell us a little bit about how you got into it, like how you heard about this opportunity. And first, I guess, going back from that, like what were you doing there exactly? And then tell us a little bit about like how you got involved.
Yeah, I went to school at Gonzaga, and they have a program that goes to Zambia. And so I did that program. It was just a summer thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so that was the first time that you went to Zambia?
That was the first mm-hmm. time, yeah. And then they were trying to like work with an organization. I don't even know if the organization still exists or if it's like morphed. Because I kind of lost touch with them. But they were called Jesuit Worldwide Learning, and they would go around and start these like learning centers for people to get like some higher education. So like associate's degrees and take some college classes.
So would they set these things up in just urban areas or also rural areas throughout the country?
Yeah, mine was really rural. So not just Zambia, it's all around the world. So it was just really anywhere that they had a footprint or a connection that they could set it up. So anyway, because of the program, I was able to go there and help set one up a year later after I first went there.
So did you seek this out, or did someone reach out to you and was like, hey, are you interested in coming back to Zambia to do this thing?
Yeah, someone reached out to me. I kind of worked with like two people, one from Gonzaga and then one from Jesuit Worldwide Learning.
Mm, cool. So so you went to Zambia the first time, and then you got in contact with this person to go there a second time to help set up this learning center. Mm-hmm. And how were you feeling before you left? Like what was the anticipation like?
Oh gosh, I don't know, because I had just graduated. I mean, I was excited, obviously, because mm-hmm. I was basically on my own doing something brand new.
Right.
So you had, like, fears, I'm sure, of, like, you know, itchy feet, but not sure exactly where your feet are leading you.
Yeah, it's funny, because my feet did itch quite a bit.
From insects.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe just, like, sweaty feet, you know, you don't wash them. They sure. get all like dirty and stuff. It's just like dirt roads out there. So
I imagine you gotta do more cleaning than normal in the climate.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, I'd be really tired, so sometimes I'd just fall asleep with dirty feet.
The life of living in rural Zambia, right?
Yeah.
So
dirty feet.
So what was your first impression like when you landed in the country, you know, what'd you think? Were like, how'd you feel?
Gosh. Well, I'd already been there. So, I mean, it was a little bit of like I remember how cool it was the first time. So the second time there was sort of that like nostalgic remembrance.
Right, because you were going back a second time. So you'd already like had that sort of first impression.
Yeah.
Did you fairly map out the country in your first stint there in the 3 months?
Kind of. I never made, there are some parts of the country I never made it to just because it's like, it's not super developed. So there's like, the road system is kind of difficult to manage.
Right. So infrastructure is complicated.
Yeah. So buses. I just kind of like stayed on the main, basically the easiest roads.
Gotcha.
And took the easiest bus routes. Yeah, but wait, so when you land, because it's because it's like less developed, it's basically like you can see the sort of like the wilderness around you. There's just like the tarmac and this tiny little airport, and then trees and like half developed roads and like wildlife running around stuff, which is kind of cool.
What is the average yearly climate in Zambia?
There's three seasons. So our summer is their like coldest season.
Okay.
Which would be like in the 60s, 60s and 70s. And it's funny because they're used to like maybe like being in the 90s. So the kids will, it'll be like 60 degrees. So I would wear like shorts and a t-shirt. And the kids would be, they'd have like winter coats and mittens on when they would walk to school in the morning, wow. Which felt a little bit like overkill.
Mm-hmm. So where were you? You were there from June? Is that when you got there?
Yeah, so I was there, like, that's in the middle of the cold season. Mm-hmm. And then it shifts to, it gets hotter, so it's, like, hot and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, like, September, maybe, like, August, September, October. And then it starts to rain, and the rains are awesome. I mean, you've probably heard the song. Mm-hmm. And this rains down in Africa. Right.
Oh, of course,
Toto's. So those are the rains. The rains that you experienced.
Yeah.
The rains in Africa. So that was what, in October?
Yeah. October and November.
Uh-huh.
Just like lightning storms and like giant raindrops. You can like take a shower outside because it's so, like, I know like in the south they'll have just like 5 minutes of like crazy downpour.
Uh-huh.
In the south.
I'm talking of about the US.
Of the US, yeah.
Like yeah.
Georgia and stuff.
Yeah. Right. So is it like that, or is it like more crazy?
It's like that, but just for like a longer, so like a, like an hour of just like
really. That sounds more really like a Caribbean rainstorm to me. I've been to Puerto Rico a couple times where it just flushes out for like an hour and a half and everything, you know, and then within a half hour after that storm, everything's already like steamed away, like you didn't even know it happened.
yeah, actually flushed out is a good way to put it, because then afterwards it's just like, I don't know, like really kind of like still, and it's like everything's been washed.
Right. Mm. Yeah, exactly. And then you can just see the steam permeating off of trees, off of bushes, off of, you know, potholes on streets and all this stuff. And the puddles are like, you know, maybe like a half a foot deep and stuff. And then it's like, it's crazy how fast it evaporates.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. And then so slowly everything will get really green
because
it's been like dry for a while, and then we get these really intense rains, and then like all these bugs and like and vegetation kind of springs up, and so it goes from like kind of like deserty to more of a jungle.
I see.
Environment.
So I feel like this, especially going to Zambia twice now, has definitely given you a lot of personal growth as a person, from just what I'm gathering from your stories thus far. Could you elaborate on like what you think the whole NGO experience in Zambia has done?
For me personally, or
for you personally,
it's like how did you grow as a person through this experience?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was doing it on my own, so that I wasn't totally alone. I had like people that were helping me behind the scenes,
right?
I think that really what that resulted in is like a lot of just sort of like downtime by myself, because there wasn't like a lot day to day to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned probably just how to like be comfortable with just kind of like sitting, by myself, but just kind of like sitting outside and waiting. There's not like a lot, there wasn't like a sort of like a fast paced feeling. It was just like really slow.
Would you say maybe it somehow lessened your dependency on like material things? Comforts, first world comforts.
Yeah, I mean, I still wear clothes and live in a house and eat good food and stuff.
Sure, but you're not like in Zambia being like, man, can I get like Uber Eats right now?
yeah, they don't know what Uber Eats is, so I guess I couldn't order. I don't know, man, it's different because you just kind of like adapt to the lifestyle.
Right, but not everybody can do that.
I guess so. I mean, think everyone could. If you challenge yourself enough, you could surprise yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, that's totally interesting. You're listening to Life Stamp, Stories from Here and There. This is KBOO 90.7 Portland, and we are talking about Zambia. This is your host, Joseph, and my co-host, Tyson, and we are interviewing my brother, Jimmy, about his experience in Zambia. So going off of just sort of like that personal growth, I wanted to ask, like, what is your, like, what were your day-to-day duties? Because you're saying, like, you know, sometimes you weren't doing a lot, but like in terms of like the, let's start with the school, like what were your duties, or like your activities that you did to help set up the school?
Yeah, so when I got there, I mean, I had no sort of like rubric, so I was just kind of making it up. So I was working with a church, so I was living at a church, at a Catholic church there, because the whole like
Jesuit.
Yeah, I went to a Catholic university, and the organization that was Catholic as well, kind of Jesuit. Anyway, so I had a lot of sort of like in, because I like was living with the priest, and the Catholic church had a lot of people. I mean, everyone goes to church there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a really big community that way. Mm-hmm. And then also if you know like one part of the community, you know the whole town, because mm-hmm. everybody knows each other.
I see.
And everybody's out, mm-hmm. like in the town walking around, or like kids are out playing and stuff. So I would just like walk around the town and start talking to people about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I made friends, because I knew like the people who, like the shop owners and people that I had met from when I studied abroad.
Mm-hmm. There. So you had to do some like promoting also.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would just go out and like tell people about it.
Uh-huh.
Be like, hey, we got this learning center that we're here, you know, we're not invading. We're trying to help, you know, you guys grow economically as a country by pushing for, you know, advanced education.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that part was interesting, because like, I didn't even know if they were going to care, because I was not.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah. I mean, right. If somebody came up and told I don't know how I would react.
Right. And everyone could speak English, I'm assuming, right? Because you're talking to them in English.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it was colonized by England. So
I see.
It was before it was Zambia. It was an English colony.
Mm.
So that's the national language.
But it is.
Yeah. I think there's like 70 languages spoken there.
Interesting. So do people speak their own language at home, or like to each other? Like, is there a time to speak English and a time to like speak a different language?
Yeah. Most people speak the tribal, whatever their tribal language is.
Was the town that you were living in, was that like one tribe that lived there, or was it like a mix of people from different tribes?
There was two tribes, primary. I mean, you know, people migrate, so there's like smatterings of people from other tribes, but like the two big ones. So there's two languages that were kind of similar, because the tribes like developed next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the two like main languages, and I learned like a little bit, but everyone speaks English just because like that's like they learn it in school.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of it?
Yeah.
What can you say?
Chimene moane is good morning, but I can't remember what good afternoon is. Anyway, so I would say like chimene moane, it was just walking by, and then you respond moane vule moane.
Ah,
it's a nice language.
Yeah. Yeah, it does sound nice.
So I'll say it to you. Chimene moane.
Male vu. Sorry.
I feel like you're always trying to Francophile stuff over here, Joseph, with some French. No, different part of the world.
Okay. So wait, what is it again? Mwene moane?
Yeah, MW. So moane.
Moane.
Yeah, vule.
Moane, vule.
Moane.
Moane.
Yeah, which is just like respect. Like, I see you.
Moane, vule, moane.
Yeah.
I see.
It's just like acknowledging that you...
that you said something to me, and then I acknowledge that you said that thing to me.
Yeah.
I see. So you would go around, you would tell people about the school, and yeah, we were kind of talking about, okay, if someone came here, like... you know, would you really care about it if someone came to your country and was like, hey, I'm setting up the school? So how was their reception to it?
Yeah, well, you know, because there's like that dynamic of like there's a lot of people doing service work and from Western countries.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're, you don't even necessarily have to like look white if you just look like you're from like outside of Africa, then they sort of like are interested in you because most of the money in the world is in not in Africa. And so I think that creates just like a little bit of a skewed and just like the way that you're perceived. So I would have a lot of people that were interested in me because of that. And then they're like
interested you in like what way? Like they wanted to sell you something or
all the above.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Interested in like where I was from, interested like if they had a business they would like try and sell me their shirts or
Here's a little bit of out of the box question in that sense, in terms of having like the Western imprint and the Western influence and people kind of gravitating towards you. Did anybody like any like African like sort of like social influencers approach you or something and try to see if they could use you as like a launch pad?
No, because I wasn't that popular.
Right. But
I was also, because I was in like a super rural area. So the popular artists are in like the capital city or like they might have a studio in Nigeria or South Africa or like.
I was checking out Zambian music before we began this whole thing, you know, last week, and I was like, it's actually some really good music out of Zambia. I was actually quite impressed.
Yeah, I love Zambian music. They have the beat is like, can I hear that?
Yeah.
And then you kind of like move your body and then
that's a fun upbeat kind
of. It's like a march like cross with like a bossa nova. It sort of reminds me of. It's pretty good.
Yeah, cool.
And there's a ton of drums. There's just like music all day long. So it'll be like 4 a.m. And
there's people playing music,
blasting music.
Oh man, how did you feel about that? I mean, did you like it, or were you like some days you're just like, I just want to sleep?
Oh gosh. Both. Cause it's kind of fun to like walk around and you're like, wow, there's just like stuff going on all the time. And then sometimes, yeah, especially if they wake you up and you're just like, oh man.
Right.
I'm just not going to sleep anymore.
Did you talk to any of the musicians? Like the local town musicians or anything like this?
Yeah, I was friends with one of them. We made a song together. I wish I had it on my old phone and I didn't like archive it
anywhere. Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, it was so
it's fun. Not on Spotify or you know.
No, nah, I mean he might have it. I don't even know if he's on Spotify.
Maybe was he a drum maker?
Like a beat maker?
No, like an actual artisan that makes the drums.
Yeah,
like the congos.
Yeah. No, he would be like in a studio like this and like.
Oh, okay.
Making music on the computer, rapping. He was a rapper.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so that actually is really interesting too because you have like the influence of like hip hop. So it's like people from Africa like had like a culture in America and then that culture sort of like came back to Africa.
Oh, I see.
So you have like this sort of like this like relationship of like rap and hip hop.
So like Black American culture influencing Zambian music.
Yeah,
I see.
And I sort of noticed that. Yeah, when I've checked out some African hip hop, you know, it's like it's totally very similar rhythmically, and but the sociological paradigms are obviously more localized to Africa,
right?
Depending on the country that's making that African hip hop,
so right?
You have a lot of the same issues, but just kind of from the way I was interpreting it lyrically is more specific to that region or that country in Africa, as opposed just like here in the States, you know, obviously Dirty South versus West Coast versus East Coast New York hip hop are all kind of talking about the same things, but from a different perspective.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. They just talk about their stories.
Yeah.
Where they're from.
So cool. So what was I guess we didn't really catch this at the beginning, but what was the name of the town that you were living in?
Oh my gosh. I can't believe I don't remember.
Is it Zambezi?
Oh yeah, maybe? Zambezi.
Was it? I remember.
Okay.
Thank you for remembering.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if Zambezi was the capital. What's the capital of Zambia?
Lusaka.
Lusaka, right.
And right. where in the country is Zambezi?
It's in the northwest. So like very northwest corner, almost close to the border.
I see. A border of what country?
What's next to Zambia? Man,
it's been a while.
A while.
Been a minute.
No, to the I think
northwest corner.
Yeah, the DRC is to the north, the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Mm-hmm. So then, the actual Congo maybe is to the northwest?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a little bit farther north is the country. That's just called the Congo.
Right.
But that whole area is like the rainforesty area.
Gotcha.
And then to the left is Namibia. Man, I should look at
Yeah.
It's okay.
I should look at the country.
This isn't about you. This is actually not an African geography quiz anyway.
I'm impressed. I mean, honestly, like so few Americans really know the, you know, geography properly of Africa. So
yeah.
I guess
that's why I had to ask.
Yeah, well, I guess we didn't talk about... So it's landlocked. Mm-hmm. It's right. Like south central, and then so like South Africa is the very south, and then Botswana is the next country north, and then Zambia, and then Zambia has countries on all four sides of it.
I see.
So it's southern hemisphere though, just barely, right? It's close to the equator, but southern hemisphere.
Yeah,
Zambia. Yeah. Like you were saying, the summers here are the winters down there. Yeah,
winters in quotes.
Well, yeah, winter.
It's just a little bit cold.
It's pleasant weather.
Probably 20 degrees south latitude or something.
Right. So after you got like you promoted, you're going around promoting the learning center. What and you got some interest, I assume, like people were interested in it.
Yeah, I got a lot of it. Well, I mean, because it was like there was no the whole reason we went there is because there was no university higher education avenue for people that lived in that specific town area. So a lot of people were interested just because, like, once you graduate high school, then there's nothing unless you have money to go to Lusaka, the capital. You just kind of hang out and I don't know. I mean, people figure out stuff to do, but
yeah.
But if you wanted to go to college or anything like that, they didn't have easy access. So we were trying to give them easier access.
What were some of the in demand skills that people wanted to learn through college?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, was it like computer skills, design, programming, like was it tech related?
I mean there was like a smattering, so some of it was like business, like people wanted to start their own businesses. Some of it was like, if I feel like the younger crowd maybe wanted a little bit more to do with like learn computer software.
Engineering production. Too, probably.
Yeah, engineering stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was tough because we weren't giving them though like specific like trade skills. It was a liberal arts.
Right, because was it sort of like the Jesuit education for like online learning? Was that kind of the idea behind it, since the organization was Jesuit?
Yeah, so like the token stories that they would tell is like people, so they did, well, they went through our program, and then they like created this offering for their community. So we were kind of trying to like bolster the community by giving people I don't know, just a little bit more like knowledge and information, because I mean that's like what liberal arts
does,
is it gives you like a little bit more info, and then
your role specifically, if I understand it right, was that you would take in a classroom of, you know, kids that were signed up or whatever, and then you just teach them how to get like interacted with the software and how to do the online learning, and then they kind of pick their subject matter through there based off of what the archive had within it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just like sitting, once people got registered, so you had to apply and then you had to like pass certain tests to make sure that you understood the like basic skills you would need, like how to use computers and speak English and stuff.
Right.
And then I would just kind of like work with them.
How big would a classroom be? How many students?
Oh, it was just like 12. I mean, when I was there, it was just like 12. Because the first like class, I just started the first class, so there's just like 12 people.
Gotcha. I see.
Did you have a lot of questions from these kids?
Yeah, because I mean, like, some people have never used computers,
right?
So like that, I mean, even like I had to learn
right
how to use, because there's like basic skills that you kind of have to like re-figure out if you're teaching somebody.
Sure, and all programs right. are different. So mm-hmm. you have to learn the program, then you have to teach the programs to the kids and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Was it your job ever to kind of like, you know, in the old high school counselor sense, try to figure out where their ambitions are and where their career paths are?
Or? A little bit, but that was more like the program, like the education's role.
Gotcha.
So like they were like connected to professors and stuff that they could hopefully talk to. I was just more like the technical side and getting the program started.
Gotcha.
What was the reception in general, like after you set it up and, you know, the students went through the school, you know, how did they feel about their, you know, what they were learning and everything?
You know, I left before any of them graduated.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. 'Cause you were only there for 6 months.
Yeah. So
I guess in more in terms of like, did they seem to enjoy it? Did they want to keep coming back?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if they were like motivated, mm-hmm. they kept coming back. Like we had like a good, I think it was like 10, mm-hmm. a group of 10 people that were pretty like driven, but there was like the question of what is this actually going to do for us?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Is this like worth our time?
Yeah.
Basically. Because I mean, you would go and you would sit in front of a computer and then you would like basically do like the first 2 years of college.
So, right.
Like, 101 classes.
Right. So then it's sort of like, why are we learning this? Or, you know.
Yeah. Like, what is this going to do? Could I do something else? And so the people that stayed were people who were just kind of like curious and interested.
I see.
About learning, I guess.
Yeah, no, that right. makes sense.
Studying.
Well, I kind of want to circle back to that whole personal growth, because I feel like a pretty important question for you. Would you do a volunteer assignment like this again if given the chance?
Mm-hmm.
Or work with another NGO doing something completely different, perhaps in another country?
Yeah. You know, I don't know, because it's really kind of difficult. The whole sort of like concept behind going somewhere outside of where your home is and then trying to like build something there, like then that place kind of becomes your home.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of hard for me because like I didn't go back to Zambia again and again.
Right, right.
So it was, I was kind of feeling like, why am I even investing time here?
Mm-hmm.
When I could invest time like in the place that I live.
Right.
Right. I feel like it becomes more spiritual and more personal and less materialistic in that sense because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, obviously, it doesn't necessarily benefit anybody materialistically to do aid work
for right.
the matter, but...
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, well, I mean, this. So the same, like, if I want to invest resources into where I live, then, like, I would recommend that for everybody. So if you live in somewhere else... where people normally do aid work, the whole sort of like driving force behind what I was doing was to try and get them to sort of like invest resources in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really about me. It was just about like taking care of your home.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes, not, oh, sorry, go ahead.
All right. I was just saying that makes a lot of sense what you're saying. Like when you spend so much time in a place, it becomes your home in a way. And like I could understand your life changing a lot in that way, where you're like, you kind of have to, like, the idea of going back to where you originally are from might be like something you have to get out of your mind, because this is what you're doing, this is your life, you know.
Yeah,
and working in this place,
and that's a big step for yeah. most people that wouldn't be willing to take.
And then the nature of like why you went there in the first place, and then what you're doing there after you're there for a few months or a year or something is probably going to change, right? Because it's like maybe you go with this idea that it's like, oh, I'm gonna like do a lot of good, but then you're there, you learn about how it is there, and you make relationships, and maybe that changes. Like, do you feel like that's like that was your experience a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I mean, like I said earlier, you kind of adjust to the lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
and then once you adjust to the lifestyle, you're like, well, it's just different here. I mean,
yeah.
Like, why am I trying? What am I trying to do?
Right.
Other than just kind of experience a different culture.
Right, because you're not like being like a biological scientist or whatever, where it makes a lot of sense, for example, to take animal samples from like a rare species of cheetah, for example,
mm-hmm.
or anything, you know, and this is your whole career and your life's passion. for example, you know, so it makes sense where you are is where you're at is helping you out with your career, as opposed to doing like the aid assignment, I think.
Yeah, so like the short-term aid assignment, because I know someone, well, I know of somebody who works in Kenya, and that's kind of become his life. So that's different because like part of him lives in Kenya now, and that's like, so he's kind of like relocated a little bit.
Right.
That's different than like going somewhere for a couple of years and then leaving.
Right.
Because when you go somewhere for a couple of years, after a while, at least I felt like, well, I don't really know if I have anything to offer.
Right.
I had myself to offer. Right.
Would it be different for you, though, if you like had a career there and the whole point of it was that you're going to build and do this career in Zambia?
Yeah, because then I would have like, it would be like I'm going to see part of my family. Like I'm going to see a place that I consider home.
Right, right. So it's having that actual knowledge that there's a deadline, there's an end date, and then you're going back to wherever home is, you know.
Yeah, that kind of like really messed with me for a little bit, because it's like shifting paradigms. It's like a Rubik's Cube almost.
Yeah.
You're like, well, where do I live? Like, what am I associated with? What am I doing?
Yeah, that makes sense. Just if you're tuning in right now, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. This is Life Stamp Stories from Here and There with Tyson and Joseph. And we are right now interviewing Jimmy. My brother Jimmy, he lived in Zambia for 6 months. In 2018, helping to set up a learning center for the people of Zambezi. And we're just going through his experience there and sort of just the whole philosophy behind, doing a short-term aid assignment like that and the experience doing that. So I think this is all really interesting because it kind of brings up this idea of doing aid work where it's like, are you actually helping a society out, or are you just doing it to feel good? You know, like that's, and I'm not asking that question to you, but it's just sort of like a general, like, you know, thing I've thought about before where it's like, when you go to a country for like a few weeks or a few months and you do a thing and then you're like, oh, I did this thing. And it's sort of like, who is actually benefiting?
Have you done it, Joseph?
I haven't done it before, no.
Would you do it?
I don't think at this point in my life I would. I think I agree with what Jimmy was saying about, like, it has to, like...
I would do it, but not his model.
Right.
I wouldn't do the education side of it. I think I would do more something from the environmental, animal preservation side of it.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like when we had talked about the Seychelles, I actually legitimately, seriously want to like go there and help do
and do some work
and do ocean marine cleanup and learn the scuba aspects of cleaning up the coral and help, you know, preserving more species in the oceans.
I would do it in the sense of like, it has to be something that I'm fully committed to. You know, it's like I'm doing this and this is my life now where I'm like learning about it. I'm going to the place, learning about it, building something, building relationships and stuff.
So you can do an assignment.
I don't know if unless that was like my job or the thing that I worked for was like, oh, I'm going to go here now for a couple months. I'm going to go. Maybe it depends on like the situation and the thing and everything. But I think it really depends on also like the organization and who they are, what kind of work they do and you know, why I'm choosing to go like work for that organization.
Well, here's something I think I do know, and I want to get into it with Jimmy here about it. I don't think it's all work and no play. There had to have been some fun to be had and stuff. You know, I'm sure you did some exploring.
Yeah.
And
let's switch to the fun part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say. So like, I guess to wrap up the whole conversation is the people that actually, I feel like benefited the most was me and then maybe like the friends that I made while I was there
for sure,
because I like built a relationship with them
and that's what mostly changed, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because I mean then like that's when you get to like sit with people and like actually kind of like share with one another, which is fun. I mean, that's part of the fun, like going to people's houses for dinner and like sitting with them for a while and chit-chatting.
Describe to me like a home-cooked family Zambian meal.
Yeah. So there's always Shima.
What's Shima?
Which is it's like a corn mush. Mm-hmm. So you like everyone cooks on charcoal. Mm-hmm. It's like it's called a braai, but just like they have like these small barbecue like.
Oh, that's thing. Interesting. That's what they call it in South Africa too.
Yeah, it's that whole area. Mm-hmm. They call it a braai. So these like charcoal outdoor stove type things. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they just have these massive pots and they fill it with water and they put cornmeal in and then you just like stir the cornmeal and it gets like really thick.
Mm-hmm.
Like putty.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use that I honestly don't know its tradition. Mm-hmm. But it's not really like very practical. Mm-hmm. Because it gets all over your hands because you use it to you basically like pick up and you roll a ball of Shima and then you pick up your food with the Shima.
Mm.
So at the end of the meal, so you're like, you pick up your beans with the Shima, you pick up your...
Mm. Kind of like Injera bread.
Yeah, well, Injera bread makes sense. Okay. Injera bread's the stuff from Ethiopia.
Right.
Like sourdough stuff.
Because
mm-hmm.
That's actually like a bread. Like a
yeah,
because
that doesn't get all over your hands.
Yeah.
But
this
I
is
see.
Like corn yeah. mush that you're...
Yeah. Like so this really is like doughy corn. That's like sticky a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Do people ever like kind of pat it with their hand to like flatten it out like a tortilla or something so they can use it to pick up food?
No, there's a technique. You pick it up with your hands and then you roll it between your thumb and your two fingers. And then you put a little imprint in it with your thumb.
To make a little pocket, like a spoon or something.
Yeah, and then you pick up your beans. So I mean, if you're really skilled, uh-huh. you might be able to like get away with using one piece of Shima for like a lot of your meal. But there's also this social.
So you eat out of it. You don't eat the Shima. Like every bite isn't like you're eating the Shima. Also.
No, well, that's what I was gonna add. Is there's like the social pressure to eat Shima.
Oh.
Because they like have a lot of pride. Associated with it.
Uh-huh.
So if you're like too skinny, they'll tell you to eat Shima.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, but so people generally don't like they'll eat the ball of Shima that they use to pick up the beans with and
I
you
see.
Make another ball and then you eat the
So you just keep beans. Eating the Shima. It does that get really filling?
Yeah,
it's a lot of corn starch. Yeah.
So your stomach is just like
full of corn.
Really full, yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly would not eat a lot because of that reason.
But I'm sure you're on your feet a lot during the day, right? Like there's a lot of like physical activity.
Yeah, so I would walk around. I'd be so tired at
yeah.
the end of the day.
So you're like, you probably want to eat a lot more too, right?
Yeah.
You moved around the country quite a bit or like when you were like off assignments?
I went to... So I was in basically the capital city's in the middle of the country, and then I would take a bus to the northwestern corner where I was.
Right.
And there's a river called the Zambezi River, which mm-hmm. is the town's right on the river,
mm.
and it's huge. It's really beautiful. It's like Columbia River, mm-hmm. about the same size.
Okay.
And it runs through the country all the way to the southern border with Zimbabwe, and. There, well, okay, I don't know the exact geography. But anyway, so the river runs all the way to the south, and then there's a town there called Livingston.
Okay.
And that's like a really
very English sounding.
Yeah. That's a huge tourist town because the river turns into a waterfall called uh-huh. Victoria Falls.
Oh, yeah, nice.
And that waterfall is like a mile long.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've seen pictures of Victoria Falls.
One of the biggest yeah. waterfalls. And the locals, they call it the smoke that thunders
because uh-huh.
there's so much mist in the air. It just looks like there's like a ball of smoke.
Oh, okay.
And then you can hear from a good radius, you can hear the waterfall.
That's such a poetic name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
So did you ever go out at night, like in the capital or any of the other, you know, smaller town villages or whatever?
Yeah.
Go experience a little bit of...
Like nightlife?
Questionable activities, perhaps.
I don't know if anything I did was that questionable. We would go to like, they have dance clubs, so.
Did they have dance clubs in the town that you lived in Zambezi?
There really wasn't enough people.
Mm.
And most of the people were like families.
They were like the 10, 20-year-olds that would go out?
Yeah. More like the 5, 20-year-olds.
Uh-huh. I see.
Anyway, but in the bigger towns, there would be... I mean, there was... Because it's not like a ritzy... Because there isn't a whole lot of infrastructure or resources. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a room. Like a concrete room with speakers that are like really, really, really loud.
Right.
Like crazy loud. and I had to like be careful where I would walk because they would be...
Did you ever like use earplugs when you went out?
No, I wish I did. But I would think about that all the time.
And is the bar just like a cooler of ice with drinks that somebody's selling stuff? Or
no, I mean there is an actual bar usually.
Yeah.
What kind of drinks would they have?
Yeah, I mean it was pretty much. I don't think there was anyone there that I can remember making cocktails. Mm. That would only be at like the ritzy.
Mm-hmm.
Places, but just like the normal like nightclubs, I think it was mostly just beer.
Mm.
They have a couple different beers that they brew in Zambia.
Okay,
they're just lagers.
Yeah,
or I think they have one beer from Zambia, and then they have some from South Africa that they sell.
What's like the Zambian national beer?
It's called Mosio Atunya, which is the
mouthful.
Yeah, but that's the I think it's Tonga, which is the tribe in Livingston, the like main tribe.
I see.
That phrase means the smoke that thunders.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's cool. So it's about Victoria Falls. So is there like I don't know. It's
the branding, I think. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, is the branding like the waterfall?
I think so.
That's cool.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
To look at it again.
What's the music like, generally speaking, at the Zambian club?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like African music, so we talked about that a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. there's like a...
Zambian hip hop.
Yeah, like a little bit of like reggae.
Mm.
I can't really describe it using words, but like the beat is like, so you have the drum that's like, and then there's like another drum that'll go like,
right.
And then like the music, the like instruments would might sound like bum 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 bum,
kind of synth bassy stuff.
Bum. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
I mean, if you're like a popular,
so it's very like beats focused. Like,
yeah. Well, drums are huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's so many drums. There.
Sounds like it'd be kind of like an African house.
Yeah.
Music to me.
Yeah.
Describing it.
Were all the clubs kind of like in these nondescript kind of concrete rooms, or did you ever go to like any cool places that were, I don't know, like were they all like that? I guess I don't really know how to describe what I'm thinking of, but
yeah, so there's one in Solwezi that I would go to that was like kind of what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a bar, and then like I don't know if everything was concrete, but mm-hmm. and there were some rugs down, mm-hmm. and like people dancing and stuff. And then the ones in Lusaka were like maybe a little bit fancier. I mean, it just depends, you know. Like, there's like all different types of places,
mm-hmm.
In a city. But the ones that I went to were like, I don't know, big rooms.
How big is the capital?
Lots of people. I remember one that was like kind of like nicely carpeted and had a stage and mm-hmm. like lights going, and
oh, nice.
This DJ that would, he kept going,
like typical like dropping the bass kind of thing. Uh-huh. That's funny.
So how big is the capital?
I don't know. We probably have to look up the info.
Did it seem like an overwhelming city to get around, or like fairly walkable, needing buses?
Yeah, I wouldn't really take buses. I would take you could like get a taxi, or you could hitch a ride. Hitching a ride is like a really easy thing to do there.
Okay.
And people can't see it, but you kind of just like wave your, like shake your wrist.
Mm.
You hold out your arm, and so like we stick out our thumb.
Mm-hmm.
There they would kind of like shake their hand.
Mm.
Okay.
And people, I mean, especially like because I was white, so it might have been assumed that like I would be able to pay them for the ride.
Mm. So do people not always get picked up?
Mm, I don't know. I don't know if I ever asked a Zambian. Because, like, Zambians, I feel like, are a lot less likely to hitch a ride.
Oh, I see.
But I never really... I don't remember ever talking to anybody about that.
I would mostly
talk about hitching a ride, because there was a lot of Peace Corps volunteers there. So we would talk about...
I see.
Talk about that a lot.
Exchange stories and stuff.
Yeah.
I looked up Lusaka. The population is 1.7 million in 2010. 2020 estimate is 2.7 million. So quite a large city.
Bigger than Portland.
Yeah, quite a bit bigger than Portland.
Yeah. I mean, it's different because it's like, it's really condensed. So there's like tons of people.
Right. So it's super crowded and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we are almost out of time, but for people who are just tuning in, this is Life Stamp, stories from here and there. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 Portland. Today we are talking about Zambia. And what's it like there from the perspective of my brother Jimmy, who was there for 6 months back in 2018. We were just talking about nightclubs, going out, what the life is like, and food, and just sort of like local culture. But right now I have the most important question of the episode.
Hit it.
Everything you've been talking about is great, but all I really, really want to know is, does it have a beach?
All right, Jimmy, so you heard that little recording. This is the section where we ask you, does Zambia have a beach?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I love it.
What's its name?
It's a ton of fun. Oh, I don't know if it has a name. The beach on the river?
The river beach.
Yeah.
This is your favorite beach.
Is it a sandy beach?
A national favorite beach.
No, this is just my beach.
Okay. Jimmy's beach in Zambia. Beach.
Cool.
Yeah, it was like me and the crocodiles, and that's
seriously
other people. Well, if you go with a group of people, then you make so much noise that the crocodiles stay away.
But you saw actual crocodiles on the beach.
Yeah, I saw a few.
Wow. So watch out. So don't go to the beach by yourself.
Not a great idea.
Uh-huh. What's it like to be mean mugged by a crocodile?
Well, I mean, you'll probably die. Because they grab you, and then they drown you, and then they eat you.
Oh, did you still jump in the water after
but
you saw
them? Crocodiles only eat if they have to. Mm-hmm. Like, so you're just part of the circle of life.
Right.
Is that what you thought? You're like, well, I can go swimming in here anyways because I'm a good sacrifice.
I did go to the beach by myself, and I got in the water and then got out. I felt like it was safe to do that.
Time to keep your legs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I would kind of like stay a little bit away from the water. I don't know. I don't feel like the crocodiles are like out to get you. They
right.
just like...
It's just if they're hungry and you look like a tasty morsel, then, you know,
yeah,
they'll come
you're
get
like
you.
Not paying attention. You don't feel like...
Right.
Yeah. You just keep your wits about you. It's the same with snakes. Like, you just kind of like pay attention.
Did you see any snakes there?
No, I didn't see any... Well... Yes, I probably saw some. I can't remember. They have this really big snake. It's called a black mamba.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Kobe Bryant. It's like an actual snake. And it's
not a snake with Kobe Bryant's head on it or something.
No, that'd be funny though.
Is it a biter or a constrictor?
It's a biter, but like once again. Yeah, I don't know. They're hard to find.
Yeah.
And, like, it's really rare to get bitten by one.
Like...
It's like if you step on it accidentally and it's like, get out of my space.
I see.
Kind of a situation.
So, speaking of wildlife, though, are there other activities? You know, if you're a tourist in Zambia, like, what would you do? Like, are there other activities where you can go see wildlife?
Yeah. Well, I mean, safaris are big in a lot of African countries. So you like go and you can do like a multiple day, like, and spend the night type deal, or just like a one day, and you get in these big land cruisers and you go through the national parks and you just see like all the wildlife, which is cool if you grew up watching The Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
And then you actually get to see it in real life.
Right. So did you see like lions and like zebras and elephants and all that?
Yeah, we didn't see any lions, but we saw a ton of elephants.
Nice.
Any big cats?
A ton of zebras. I always forget the name of this like animal that is like prolific there.
Is it like a horse?
Oh, is it like a springbok?
Not a springbok.
Okay.
Gazelle.
Not a gazelle, but we're on the right track.
Okay. Kind of, okay.
They're everywhere. I'd have to look it up because I always forget there.
Is it sort of like a national animal, or is it just, it's just prolific?
Just prolific. I don't know what constitutes a national animal.
Well, if it's like the, you know, the government's like, this is our national animal.
Oh, yeah, I think it's just prolific.
I see.
Yeah, and like water buffalo and...
Hippopotamus.
Hippos, yeah, hippos are really funny.
Because like, there's a lot of river wildlife from the sounds of in Zambia and stuff, so...
Yeah, and you can go on, like, river cruises, like, real-life jungle cruises.
Oh, okay.
Where you get to see, like, all this...
And you get to see the hippos?
Yeah, and that's where I saw crocodiles.
Can one actually avoid the mosquitoes on this thing, or... I imagine it doesn't really matter, you're just getting chewed up.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I'm the only... Well, actually, I didn't know anyone who got malaria.
Mm. Did you?
There's mosquitoes there. Like, there's mosquitoes here.
Did you need to take?
I never knew anybody. That,
or do you have to take or anything?
Yeah, like none of that. Crazy. No one ever got.
I mean, that's
good.
That's amazing. I'm glad to hear that.
Do you have to take malaria pills when you go to Zambia?
I did, but it's bad. It's not fun.
So yeah, that's what I've heard.
I stopped taking them.
I see.
I just did it for like a week.
You're like, this does not make me feel good. Yeah. I've heard that they don't make you feel like great.
They're almost like hallucinogens.
Oh, really?
Like. Yeah, when you dream, when you go to bed, it's kind of...
Oh, it gives you bad dreams?
Does it mess with your appetite and stuff, too, when you're on them?
Maybe a little bit. I don't remember. I was fine.
Yeah.
I just stopped taking them because I didn't feel like they were good for me.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And you just risked it and didn't get malaria, thankfully.
Fine. I mean, I got mosquito bites, but...
Yeah, but not every mosquito is carrying malaria.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Well, we are out of time for today, but Jimmy, just want to say thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story and your experience. It was really cool to learn and hear about all of that. I guess for me, rehearing, but a lot of stuff that I forgot about. But yeah. So any last words, anyone? Are we all good?
I have to say I've been blessed to have like Joseph and his brother in the studio today. It's like I'm around the whole McGinley family, so thank you both. It's like I've got two Josephs. It's a little weird.
It's
but I can get used to it just for today.
Yeah, just for today.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks guys.
Yeah. All right. Well, signing off. This is Life Stamps.
Stories from here and there. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time,
happy traveling!
You're listening to KBOO Portland.